Welcome to Nourish and Shine, where I talk with passionate leaders in the fields of nutrition, functional and integrative medicine, and wellness, providing inspiration and practical advice to nourish your mind, body, and spirit, optimize your health, and live a whole vibrant life starting now. Today, I'm talking with Jessica Remington from Big River Kombucha. We are talking all about what kombucha is, the potential health benefits of kombucha, and how they started their small business and are doing things differently. Jessica was so much fun to talk with, and I think you're really going to love this interview. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to Nourish and Shine, Jessica Remington from Big River Kombucha. I'm so excited to have you here. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Amy. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk all about kombucha, which I am so excited. But before we do that, I would love for you to tell our audience about yourself.
So Big River Kombucha is just me and my husband, Matt. Matt and I had talked about having our own small business for years. We've been together for 12 years and had always had a conversation about, you know, how do we start a small business? What small business would it be? And then it was only a matter of time before we had that lightning bolt that struck us. And now looking back, kind of all of our life experiences really led us to our own kombucha business. But Matt has his master's in food science, just as some background. He had worked in beer brewing and also food safety. I have my bachelor's and master's in healthcare administration, so I kind of had the business side of things.
Awesome. And how did you guys decide on kombucha? I know Matt has that background in food science, but what made you really interested in kombucha?
Absolutely. So 3 years ago, Matt and I went hiking out west. We love the Sedona, Arizona area. Had been hiking out west after a long day of hiking. We saw kind of a sign on the road that said, you know, kombucha on tap. We had pulled off and had our first kombucha, really. So we're still relatively new to kombucha drinking within the last 3 years. Fast forward 3 years later, hiking in the same area. I was like, Matt, we need to go get some of that kombucha again. So we had pulled off in that same shop and we're drinking it. And at that moment, we started having a conversation about, like, how do we bring back a good tasting kombucha into the Midwest? And I said to Matt, obviously with his background, I said, Matt, can you make me a kombucha that's not too acidic, not too vinegary, and doesn't have anything floating in it? Because just knowing him and his background with food science, I was like, this is what I need in a kombucha. So that's exactly what we did. We came back after that trip and just kind of jumped right in and started experimenting, but really wanted to use honey in our kombuchas.
Oh, I love it. And so I guess we should rewind a little bit. Can you explain for people who have never had kombucha, what is kombucha?
Absolutely. We actually get a lot of people in our shop that wander and ask that question. I think I have on my little chalkboard sign outside of our door that says, come in and ask us what kombucha is, then try some. So kombucha, in the simplest of terms, is just fermented sweet tea. However, I like to tell people we do a couple things different than what's really standard in the market. The first thing we do with kombucha is we use honey to ferment our kombuchas out instead of cane sugar. We get our honey from a local organic farm out of the Rushford, Minnesota region. It was really important that we use local ingredients whenever possible. We do not add juice back into our kombuchas. So sometimes for folks that drink kombucha, you'll see in the bottom of your bottle, it's like a 10% juice blend added back in. We just use teas and botanicals. That's the only flavor that comes from our drink. So we want all of the flavor really in our kombucha to come from the fermentation character, that honey we talked about, and the tea and botanicals. So it's really important to us also, by not adding juice back in, we want to keep the sugar content low because it's a healthy beverage. We want to keep it that way.
Oh yeah, for sure. And kombucha seems to have like caught on over the last 3 years, I feel like, because I just notice it more and more in like the co-ops and everything. And is this like a new thing? Like did kombucha just like appear 3 years ago, or is this more of like a traditional fermented drink?
Yeah, so kombucha has actually been around for thousands of years. It has Asian origins. But really, I think the first uptick in the United States was in the 1970s. And now in the last maybe 5, 8, 10 years, there's been a resurgence of it. Especially now in the last year or so, you're really seeing an uptick in the United States market. So it's been around for a while, but I think people are really noticing it more. And as we have a more health conscious, culture, and I think people are focused more on how they kind of live their best lives, I think people are looking for options besides the traditional sugar sweetened beverages to drink.
Oh yeah, for sure. And so can you explain to me how do people make, or like how do you or others, I know there's a lot of people doing home brewing, how do you make kombucha or kind of what's the general way to make it?
Yeah, absolutely. So you start by making sweet tea first. Then you ferment that with a bacteria and yeast culture. That's where people often talk about that SCOBY, which stands for a symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast, or sometimes people refer to it as a mother. So you ferment that sweet tea with that bacteria and yeast culture. That's going to ferment for several weeks. During that time, the yeast and then also some bacteria consumes that honey, that fermentable sugar. In some cases, it's cane sugar, but in our case, it's honey. So that yeast and bacteria consume that honey. It converts it to alcohol. Then that bacteria consumes the alcohol and converts it to acid. So that's why I always tell people it's an acidic beverage because that process needs to happen to remove most of the alcohol. So by law, it's a non-alcoholic beverage. It is any a non-alcoholic beverage in general is any drink under 0.5%.
Oh, interesting. And that's, and you, I think, had mentioned that you guys are maybe even a little on the lower side with that because of your process and not having as much sugar in there. Is that right?
Yeah, so one of the reasons that we don't want to add more juice in, if you have more sugar and if it's sitting in a bottle on a shelf, we don't want to have that yeast consuming more of that sugar and producing more alcohol. So that's something that Matt and I are always very conservative about, is making sure that there's no alcohol creep in the product. We've got folks that have come into our shop that are not only kids, but recovering alcoholics or people that just choose not to drink. So it's always been very important to us that we make sure that we're safely below that 0.5%.
Awesome. And my daughter is one of those kids
She's a great customer.
who loves kombucha now. So, anyway, the one question I have about the mother culture, I know like all these people are brewing kombucha and there's, different manufacturers and all that. Are all the cultures like the same starting culture or do they vary by region? How does that work?
Yeah, so that's a fabulous question. So Acetobacter is an aerobic, it's requiring oxygen bacteria strain that produces acetic acid and gluconic acid. So we've done an acid panel, so I can tell you exactly which acids our kombucha produces. But I wouldn't say that all cultures are necessarily the same, and I don't know for sure. That's something that I think regionally it could have some variance based on which bacteria and yeast are in the air. The one thing I will tell you is we're actually participating in a study with Tufts University. There's a regional study that they're doing where they're looking at the composition of cultures across the United States to understand regional variances. So I don't know the answer to that question. That's why it's such a good one. But I would assume that there would be some variances based on the region that you're in and which bacteria and yeast is in your air. I'll also say that something that Matt works really hard to prevent a change in our culture. So when we're producing, Matt's kind of beer brewing background, I think, steps in, and he's very conscious of how do we protect our bacteria and yeast culture so that it doesn't change over time. And so by that, I mean, when he's transferring product, we try and transfer with a closed loop system so it's not being exposed to oxygen. Because we don't want to have the we won't even have, let me have the windows open. I mean, that kind of level of making sure that there's nothing foreign being incorporated into our product, because we don't want our culture to change over time. And even if I think about how Matt and I chose the culture, we had purchased, multiple different cultures from different respectable labs and agencies, and then we kept going. We brewed with them. We did pilot batches, and we kept going back to this one same culture, which is the one that you drink when you come into our shop. But even the between those five different cultures we bought in the beginning, there's variances in terms of the taste between each of those. So yes, I think they're different. I can't definitively tell you. I think there's going to be more research done. Kombucha science is still relatively young. If you consider like beer brewing science, there's, hundreds and hundreds of years of research data that people have on it. But when it comes to kombucha science, there's very little researched literature on it compared and from a comparison standpoint.
Oh, that is so interesting. And it's cool that you guys are going to be part of the research study. I can't wait to see what they come up with after that.
Yeah, we submitted it last January. I think it was last January. So, it's, I mean, we haven't got the results back yet. So I'm expecting it. It was part of a master's thesis, I believe. So we're hoping to get it back soon because it's going to tell us the exact composition of which bacteria and which yeast are in it. And then what I can do with that information is I can say to you, okay, Amy, here's exactly the bacteria. You can go Google that and find out, okay, what does this bacteria really do for me?
Oh, cool. That would be really interesting. So speaking of like, what does bacteria do for you? I know as a manufacturer, you can't claim specific benefits. But just speaking generally, what are some of the potential health benefits related to kombucha?
Sure. Yeah. So kombucha, I think a lot of people drink it because it's known for the probiotics that it creates during the fermentation process. So probiotics, as you obviously know, and probably many people, are believed to improve gut health and aid in digestion. Additionally, what I always tell people when they come in the shop, I say we use a variety of tea blends, including green tea, white tea, black tea, rooibos. So we regularly use, though, green teas, knowing, again, what a nice antioxidant teas are, specifically polyphenols. So antioxidants, as many people know, too, protect against cells against damage of free radicals, which free radicals then play a role in heart disease, cancer, and kind of those types of things. So long-winded answer. Not only we got the probiotics, also from a tea perspective, you're going to benefit from the antioxidants and that. But really, you know, taking a step even back, our intention was really to just make a flavorful beverage that was low in sugars and calories that might be a good alternate to someone who would otherwise have a sugar sweetened beverage. Or another piece of this is an option for someone who wants to have a social beverage, but not having alcohol. And what's been really interesting, we've had some folks come in our shop and they said, I'm so glad you're now appearing at this bar, whatever bar it is, because I can go out socially and no longer have to have an alcoholic drink anymore. I can have a kombucha, which is perceived as a social beverage, and then I'm not going to be questioned why I have a water in my hand or why I have a soda in my hand. So that's been fun to hear as well.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And so as far as like kombucha versus other probiotic foods, how does it compare?
Yeah, so there's going to be some differences between kombucha and other probiotic foods. If you were to ask someone, hey, name a probiotic food, most people are going to say yogurt, maybe some other type of fermented vegetable like a, you know, a kimchi or something like that. But really the differences are going to be, first of all, in kombucha, there's going to be some residual caffeine from the tea. There's going to be a little bit of trace amount of alcohol, like I had previously mentioned. The other thing I think is different is when you think of probiotics, you oftentimes think of it being edible. And in this case, it's more of that light effervescent drink. I think the other important thing is there's no allergens in our kombucha versus like, you know, dairy and yogurt. So for folks that potentially have allergens, kombucha is a good option.
Oh yeah, that's a really good point. So how much is like an okay amount for people to consume on a regular basis? Like what's a serving size of kombucha? And is it possible to drink too much? I know with some of the other probiotic foods, sometimes you hear, or at least I see people really overdoing it.
Yeah, that's another great question. So, you know, unfortunately, I don't think there's a solid answer have been decided on this topic. There's a lot of opinion-based information though around it. And even, you know, several months ago, I, you know, Googled that same question. It's hard to find a credible source. So what I always tell people is really just listen to your body and adjust it accordingly. For those though that are pregnant, I always obviously point out when I see someone come in that's obviously pregnant, make sure that they know there's trace amounts of alcohol. But other than that, oh, and then also caffeine from that perspective. Some people are very sensitive to caffeine. So albeit it's a very small amount from a comparison standpoint versus if you just brew up a cup of tea, I still want people to know that. The other thing I tell people is, you know, sometimes certain acids that can not sit as well. You know, I have never personally had problems with it. I had another acidic type beverage at a different business, maybe about a half a year ago. And Matt and I both left that business with kind of an upset stomach. But I don't have the same instance happen with our kombuchas, and we drink a lot of kombucha. So we do. Because what happens is we'll be canning. So like this Thursday, we're going to be canning hundreds of cans with our filler and steamer. And then what happens is when the keg is almost empty, you might only get like a half a cup out of the can. So I can't like can that. So we just like pour it to the side. And then by the end of the night, I've got like, you know, 20 ounces of kombucha that I need to drink. So the jury's out. I don't really know if you can have too much. best answer though is to just kind of listen to your body. And if it doesn't feel right, you know, stop. The other piece that I tell people, typically I say, you know, start on one glass a night, one, you don't serving a night. I have had a customer come in and she said, it's changed my digestive health. I've never felt better. And what she was telling me, I said, how much are you drinking? And she said, well, I drink about 8 ounces a night, just a little glass, kind of replacing it, like where people would sometimes do wine, just as a glass a night. And she goes, I haven't felt better. So that was fun to hear. That was unsolicited information.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I do like the idea of really just listening to your body. I don't think you can ever really go wrong that way. So <Yeah. laughs> just starting low and going slow and, you know, not going too crazy on it. So
exactly.
Are there any other adverse effects or other things people have to watch out for with kombucha?
You know, the only other thing that I warn people, I had a woman come in that recently diagnosed with cancer. I think if you have a suppressed immune system, that's the other caution that I tell people, you know, just to consult your health practitioner, because I want to make sure that, again, anyone who's drinking it is safe and there's nothing, you know, there's no contraindications to it.
Oh, yeah. That's a really great piece of advice. So let's talk about what makes yours unique. I know you already said honey, which I think is so cool, and it's local honey. What else do you guys do to make it unique?
So I think the honey is a huge piece, and that's obviously something that's very different and much more expensive for us to do, but it's really important to us. Not only, number one, from a supporting local economy, supporting bee farmers locally, but then also, too, you know, honey gives a different flavor complexity to the drink. So if you have cane sugar, it just operates as a fermentable. There's no real flavor to it other than sweet. But now if you pull out honey, which the bees at Spring Bee Honey, they pollinate apple trees and cherry trees, it gives it a whole flavor complexity that we feel like then flows into our drink. So I know that you've drank our original. And so you can attest, you get some of that honey aroma there and some of that fruitiness from I think the honey. I mean, that kind of attributes into the drink.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And you guys use some different teas too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Use a lot of different teas. Like I mentioned, black tea, white tea, green tea, rooibos, which is technically a root. We want to use a lot of different flavors. And that's something we continue to work with is brewing with different types of teas to get different characters. So it's been really fun as I buy tea at 50 plus pounds a swipe. So I buy a lot of tea and we brew up a lot of different batches. And right now I've got probably like 5 or 6 different 1 gallon batches going, just to see what type of different character we can get out of different teas, even like pu'er's too. I mean, there's just such a variety. It's been really fun to learn about the different tea blends that are out there.
Oh, cool. And so one of my favorite things about you guys is that you have like the most unique, cool flavors. If you're willing to share, can you tell us some that you have in the pipeline or some of your favorites that you've brewed up so far?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. So we have, I know right now, Matt has an aronia berry kombucha underway. Are you familiar with aronia berry?
No, well, yes and no. I know what they are. I don't know the taste though.
Yeah. So that was something actually, a lady that lives in the area, she had dropped off a bucket of aronia berries for us to try. It's a choke berry, and choke berries are super powerful in antioxidants. But they almost have like a crab apple kind of, taste. So Matt, he kind of cooked it down. He actually blended it with our honey. So it can be used as the fermentable in our kombucha. And so we have a pilot batch of that going just to see kind of how it turns out. Which has been really fun. Other ones that he's working on is a juniper. He really wants to make a juniper kombucha work. so he's been working hard on that one for a while. We've made raspberry, turmeric, let's see what else, you know, ginger, a rose that was delightful. Oh, a jasmine I really like personally. So yeah, just always thinking about new different flavors. We also want to make sure we catch, you know, some of the seasonals. And now as we transition to winter, you know, the flavors that we will offer in the winter will be, you know, probably a little bit different than what we have in the summer. In the summer, you want something light and refreshing. So in the winter, you want maybe something a little heavier. So, we'll definitely start doing that. But in our tap room, what we do is we have our 4 kind of standard flavors. So we've got original. And all of our kombuchas have fun little cute names. We've got Paddle Boat Peach and Bluff Top Blueberry Hibiscus and Driftless Ginger Lime. But then we also have rotating flavors. So the goal is always to have multiple different rotating flavors in our tap room where Matt can just experiment and try different flavors and see what he comes up with. So the goal is hopefully when people come to visit us, they have lots of different options of things to try that we're creating. And then based on what we see people like, we want to get those out to our clients. Because like you had mentioned, we're a manufacturer. So we have about 13 regional accounts that we distribute to, both tap product and our cans. And then the idea would be if there's something that's popular in our tap room, you know, maybe we can go put it on tap over at a coffee shop in Winona or something like that.
Oh, cool. And I have to share that you came up to the Nourish Your Soul retreat and did a tasting, which was fabulous. And
yeah,
like absolute favorite is eucalyptus. And so crazy.
Oh, yeah.
It was amazing. And like ever since then, I've been like, I need to get some eucalyptus kombucha. I love how creative you guys are with the flavors.
Oh yeah. It's a lot. It's funny. Cause even like, I feel like Matt comes up with it in the most random places. He'll just be like sitting on the couch and you think that he's thinking about something else. Like we should be making this or we should make this. So, and when we drive, all we talk about is kombucha these days too. We go for like, we'll drive up to Wabasha or we'll drive down to La Crosse. And all we talk about is our little business and different ideas we have for it. We have a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I love the seasonality. To be able to change the flavors with the season is so cool, especially with having that local connection and, you know, changing with the seasons. I just think it makes it even better. So very cool.
One thing that's been really surprising actually was, you know, we've had a lot of folks from the Twin Cities come down to our shop and they're like, there's no kombucha tap room in the Twin Cities. But I love the opportunity to have people come in and try our product because sometimes people will buy something and they'll be like, oh yeah, that's an okay flavor. That's good. But it's not something they love. And I think by having the tap room where you've got all these different flavors and it lets us talk about our product and explain why we're doing what we're doing. It's just been super fun to I don't know, connect with people and explain what we're doing and hopefully find a kombucha they really love.
Oh yeah. And I know you shared a couple memorable like customer stories. Do you have any other stories to share about like people's experiences with kombucha?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, absolutely. So that's one of the best parts of, I think, of my new job here doing this is I love it when people walk into our shop that have one, never heard of kombucha, don't even know how to pronunciate it. And I've heard every pronunciation across in the book. Or two, come in already hating it just because of maybe they have had a spouse that had some more funkier kombucha and they tried it and they hated it, or they got a really vinegary one in the past, or another favorite is just they've heard bad things from friends and so they don't even want to try it. So they'll come into our shop and I can think even just 2 weekends ago, there was a spouse that came with his wife and would not try it. Came into the shop, wouldn't try any of our kombuchas. Absolutely, completely against it, kind of stood off to the side. And I was, you know, giving her my spiel, what I normally do, explaining, you know, that we use honey. Matt has made it just so darn palatable, just super easy to drink. Our kombucha is very, and you can attest, it's very light and refreshing. It's not aggressive. And I was explaining to him, like, you know, I said, blueberry hibiscus is probably right now my best seller. And I've got 2-year-olds that drink multiple 14-ounce glasses in a sitting. I can think of one little girl that came in and drank 2 full glasses in a sitting. And oh, I kept talking with his wife, and after a while he kind of said, well, I guess if a 2-year-old can drink it, then I can try it. So tried it and they left with a growler of blueberry hibiscus.
Awesome. Oh, that's fun to be able to totally change their whole attitude.
Oh, it's so much fun. It's so much fun when someone comes in totally ready to hate our product or hate kombucha, they leave with a growler, a 4-pack, and a t-shirt. Those are my favorites.
That's awesome. And I think you're right though, because yours is totally different. And I have to like kind of embarrassingly admit that before I tasted yours, I was like, I'm not that big of a fan of kombucha. Because I always was like, oh, it's a little too sweet. And like, I had heard it had like some alcohol in it. And I was like, I don't know how much alcohol it really has. Like, I don't know. And I kind of watch caffeine. So I just wasn't ever crazy about it. But yours really, like, and I am very conscious about sugar, and it is not super sugary at all. And it really, I think I've heard you describe it as like a dry wine. Like, it has that flavor, like tons of flavor and like that carbonation that you love from soda, but without like the super, super sweetness. So you've even converted me.
Oh, good. No, and that means a lot. Cause I mean, I think you're one of the like more conscious consumers. So you have awareness too of like sweetness. And that's really important to us, again, is to keep the sugar content low. And it does have that dry, almost dry wine like character. And you don't have the cloyingly sweet on the back end. So I know our sugar content is low. I know I've told you before, but I just want to mention for anyone else that's listening that we have, there's a company, a nonprofit in Minnesota called AURI, Agriculture Utilization Research Institute. And what they do is they work with small food companies like ours, and they'll help do nutritional analyses or anything else that we need on a sliding scale to help small businesses get going and stay up and running. So we've contracted with them. They're going to be doing a nutritional analyses on all of our four flagship products. So not only will they do the regular alcohol testing for us, just to make sure that we keep staying that dialed in, they're also going to do then the nutrition panel, telling us number of calories, carbohydrates, sugar content. So I'm super excited to see what that is, because Matt and I both have guesses that it's very low, but it'll be fun to have that kind of reaffirmed.
Oh yeah, totally. And one other thing I love about how you guys make the kombucha is you really use organic ingredients, right? And why is that important to you, or is it important, I guess?
Yeah, no, so it's always been important to Matt and I that we use locally sourced and organic ingredients whenever possible. At this time, we're not certified organic because that's expensive. However, all the teas, herbs, and botanicals that we use in our kombucha are organic. And then we also get our honey from an organic farm. So the honey isn't certified organic, but the farm is an organic farm. And that's Spring Bee Honey out of Rushford, Minnesota. We do hope to be a certified organic producer in the future. So really it's more about, you know, the steps you have to go through to get the organic certification. But again, it's been really important to Matt and I that, you know, using the local products and buying organic whenever possible is incorporated in our business.
Oh yeah. And that's something that's important to me as well. And I think just knowing like that you're using good products, like going in, obviously makes products so much better. So that's wonderful.
I should mention, so when we were like trying the recipes out, I mean, we got 5 different honeys, you know, we got multiple cultures, and we kept brewing with these different, you know, varieties. So we got Walmart honey, we got, you know, Spring Bee honey, we got other types of honey. And, you know, it's amazing when you do side-by-side taste comparisons, the difference between a high quality honey, where you know what the bees are pollinating, and even variations in what the bees are pollinating and how that changes the flavor profile. But I encourage anyone who wants an interesting afternoon exercise to buy a couple honeys, try them side by side, and you will be converted to good local honey very quickly.
Oh, I totally agree with you. I went up to a honeybee like class up at a local apple orchard, and they did exactly that and talked about, tasted it. And then they talked about like what the bees had pollinated with each of the honeys. And ever since then I was like, oh my gosh, like it's mind blowing once you, you know, realize like how different honeys can be, I guess.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, Matt and I, we jokingly said you can make pretty decent kombucha with, you know, Walmart honey and some, you know, Lipton tea bags. But when we started using, I mean, as we were piloting, obviously we could, but as you were using now, start to use these really high quality organic teas, and you start using, you know, high quality honey, I mean, it changes the product, you know, to a whole other level.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I guess a few other questions I just wanted to ask you. Generally speaking, you guys have been doing a fabulous job of starting your own business. And I know you mentioned that was a dream for you. How did you guys kind of go about even getting started with that? And then like, what tips would you have and like lessons learned so far along the way?
Yeah. So, I mean, once you commit to like, okay, let's start a business, it's all jumping in. I think, you know, for us getting started, it was like, okay, let's really refine and start working on the product. So, I mean, a lot of hours spent, you know, pilot batches over and over and over again and over and over and over again until we had it just the way we wanted it. At the same time, kind of Matt was focusing on that. I focused on like, okay, how do you set up an LLC? I'm like, oh, that sounds like something I'd like to learn how to do. So, you know, I start researching that. Then you start calling the small business development center in your local community, and you start networking and talking to people. And you start, I started meeting other people in the community, say, hey, you know, I'm looking to, you know, set up my own LLC. How do you do that? What do you recommend? So it kind of then starts cascading, because every person you talk to then connects you to someone else, and that person connects you to someone else. So you just start collecting all this information. And then I'm like, oh, well, there's this sales and use tax seminar. I'm in this, you know, Minnesota, Wisconsin area. I need to make sure I understand how to collect sales tax across both state lines. Then I went to a half day seminar. So you start collecting all this information, that, which I think positions you well then to, okay, now we've got this product that we love. We've got our LLC squared away, and all those little pieces that you need to have set up. And then, you know, from a space perspective, I think it's about putting yourself out there. So the space we currently rent, I cold called the building owner. I noticed that it had an ice cream shop in back. So I was like, well, it's probably been licensed for food in the past. So it needs some only minor adjustments for us to be able to get it food manufacturing ready. So I called and I said, hey, you know, my name's Jessica Remington, and I would like to make, you know, kombucha out of your, and I said, and first they like kombucha, and they're like, oh, we saw that on Shark Tank. But no, so just about putting yourself out there, asking the question. I mean, the worst that could happen would they say, no, you know, what is this weird kombucha stuff? We don't want any part of it. But instead they were willing to give us a shot, and they let us rent their space. And then from that point on, then it all kind of just rolled, and we opened June 8th. Both working full time. And 3 days later, I said, Matt, you have to quit your job. So Matt quit his job, and now he's been technically employed at our new little place since then. So it all kind of cascaded from there.
Oh, that's so awesome. And you guys really blew up with popularity, like pretty much right away. It seems like you, I think, have such an interest in the community. And it's been fun, even while I'm in there, to see people coming in and like you said, that are new to kombucha, or like the regulars. Like, I tend to come on Friday and like, I kind of see some of the same people.
So Friday is the regular day.
yeah. And so I think that's really neat. But I know you've mentioned before, like, it's hard to keep up with all the orders now, which is a really nice problem to have. But how do you guys manage that? Like, with being new and like very popular?
Yeah, no, so I think with any business, one piece of advice that I would give someone is it's going to be a lot of work. But obviously anything worth doing, you know, it's worth it. You know, you need to put the time in. So, you know, I think the only risk that people have of not, you know, starting their business, people shouldn't avoid it just because it's going to be a lot of work. I think once you're committed to doing something like that, and for Matt and I, we're both all in, and that's one nice thing about doing it with your spouse. You know, we're doing it together, so it's a couple project. You know, it's not like he's working late nights. He is there right now, by the way, you know, 7:15 at night. The last couple nights, he stayed up till, you know, midnight, 1 a.m., actually, because we have 5 batches all due at the same time. Oh my God. This is like a perfect storm of bad timing. So, you know, from that regard, you know, how do you keep up? I think you do your best every day. You work hard. I mean, I go to work all day at my traditional job because insurance is expensive. So I still work full time, but we do that. I go to work all day. And then, you know what, after work, I might go help Matt can, or I might go, you know, clean the shop or do whatever needs to be done. I think, when you start a business, you just kind of have that recognition that that's what you have to do to chase your dream. And that's okay. And so you put maybe some other things on hold for a while, but ultimately I think it's the right thing to do if it's something you're excited and passionate about.
Oh, totally. So that transitions really well into one of my questions. What do you do for self-care? Oh. You guys are running around crazy.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So I've always really liked group fitness classes to stay active. I find it fun. You know, I like to go, you know, for a jog now and then in the past, but really I started going to group fitness classes, specifically like bar. And then I went for like 2.5 years to hip hop cardio. And I'm a horrible dancer, first of all. I mean, I'm really awful. I have no dance background, but it was fun. And so I enjoyed going. And then Matt tells me that I've improved in my dancing skills. So that's helped too. So I appreciate that he's noticed the skill that I've gained. But Matt and I, we also like traveling and exposing ourselves to new places and people and experiences. But like I said, some of that's on hold, just given kind of the launch of our new business. But, you know, we're in a constant place of, you know, being a work in progress. I like a lot of like self-reflection and things like that. I think I'm probably not as good at self-care just right now because we're so early in our business. But I actually messaged the gals at one of the places where I go to bar class. I said, I'm going to start coming back again. So you will expect to see me.
That's good. Putting it out there.
Yeah.
I love bar. So I totally feel you on that one. So one of the wrap up questions is, what does nourish mean to you? And I love to ask everyone this.
Oh yeah. So, you know, I think nourish is about supplying yourself with whatever it is necessary for your own life, health, or personal growth. And so, like I said, I do a lot of personal reflection, and I think it's really important for people to understand how you recharge. And so when I talk to anyone, I always say, you know, what do you do to fill your cup? And for each person, that's going to look very different, but I think it's important that people understand what that is for them. And so having that self-awareness really helps, I think, each person nourish themselves.
Oh yeah, definitely. So any last things you want us to know?
Yeah, you know, I think a couple things as I was, you know, reflecting on our business and this conversation, one of my mentors had said to me that infinity times zero is still zero. And he had said, you can manifest your desired future by small things you do from today or from big things, but not from no things. So essentially, you got to do a little bit of something every day to get in your desired direction. And, you know, we look back now, and I think it's funny because we always talk about having our small business, but until we started taking those like small steps in that direction, then all of a sudden it just starts to roll. So what I would do or tell anyone, you know, that was interested in starting their own small business is that it's worth it. And just, you know, even just start, put a little bit of time in every night after you get home from working. If you're tired, do it anyways. Because eventually it's going to manifest into something bigger for you. And I think the other thing that I would want people to know just about our product is, you know, if you are listening and you're not a kombucha drinker, again, if you've heard some negative things, I would just say, hey, you know what, forget everything that you've heard about kombucha and give ours a try. So I think you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Well, I know people are going to want to connect with you guys and find out where they can try your fabulous kombucha. Where should we send them to?
Yeah, so send them to our website, www.bigriverkombucha.com. We've got a place on the website where it shows you all the different locations that currently carry our product. In addition, you can find our address where our tap room is. We've got limited tap room hours. We also make all of our product out of that space too. We like to come in, we like to talk with people and tell them and show them what we're doing. Additionally, you can follow us on Instagram or Facebook.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. It's been wonderful talking with you, and hopefully I'll stop in Friday for some more kombucha.
Awesome. Thank you, Amy, so much. Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to Nourish and Shine. I hope that you enjoy this episode and that you'll leave me a review on iTunes so that more people can hear the podcast. I'd also love to connect with you on social media. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I would love to hear your questions, so please send them my way. Also, you can check out my website. It's amysopola.com. I hope that today's interview provided you with some inspiration and practical advice to nourish your mind, body, and spirit, optimize your health, and to live a whole, vibrant life. Please join me again next week for another amazing interview. Have a wonderful week. The information provided on this podcast is for educational purposes only. It's not intended to diagnose or treat any disease or condition. Please do not apply any of this information without first speaking with your medical provider.